Welcome to the Real P3 Podcast, now co-hosted by myself, Casey Bradley, and my esteemed colleague, Philip Johan Oldendahl from Zimbabwe. As we reintroduce the global agribusiness dimension to the Real P3, we aim to connect you with extraordinary individuals who inspire us to become unstoppable in both life and business. While I continue to shed light on the latest in animal nutrition and health, focusing on the U.S. perspective, Johan will open the doors to his vast global network as a Neufeld scholar. Embark with us on this enriched journey of discovery and practical insights. Our expanded view will navigate through the intricate world of agribusiness, powered by the collaborative efforts of Animistic and Swine Nutrition Management. This podcast is your bridge to groundbreaking ideas in animal nutrition, agriculture, and beyond, promising episodes that are not only enlightening, but deeply inspiring. Tune in to grow and transform with us. Welcome to the Real P3 Podcast, where science and heart converge, empowering knowledge to spring into action. So welcome to this week's episode of The Real P3. We thought we would pair off the two co-hosts and talk about a subject that has been brought to my attention by different listeners and different people who reach out to me for support. And this is also coming off of, at least in the U.S. or the world, that we just had Women's History Month in March. And everybody had some nice, lovely posts about women in their businesses and different things. And as I reflect on it, I didn't post a lot. Being a female business owner or a host of two podcasts, like, didn't make it a really big deal. And the reason is I'm not so sure that, we should select certain groups to have their own history month. And I want to say, as being a female, or a woman out there, is I'm not done making history. So it's nice to retrospect to see where we've come, but kind of to bring it back to where we are. And I thought it would be really great to hit this off with my co-host, Philip, from a different country and a different perspective on potentially gender and how it fits into agribusiness. And we'll get into the conversation and more behind the scenes. And hopefully this will be one of the first. And certain people, obviously, different companies have to have their blessing before they're allowed to talk about this. I think Philip's going to go cautiously as well, because I don't know if he has truly blessing from his job either. But I thought it would be within friends to discuss this topic in a friendly way, in a safe way, so people can understand some of the questions or concerns coming out and how we still get through them as we are a platform of thought leadership for the agriculture world. So what do you think about that, Philip? Am I approaching it safely enough for you?
You introduced it really well. It is a touchy topic and potentially one where you get worried if you say something or say something that's out of your own safe space, people could misperceive it and shoot you down. And that was like one of the comments I said. I just feel like it's such a confusing space to be in, because for some reason, like, white men are the enemy. That's like, you could never have a white male history month or whatever without people, you know, losing it about it. And it's difficult being in that space, because My part is I'm a minority here where I live, you know, and I've had an incredible opportunity of getting to know female Nuffield scholars from all over the world, something I'd never been exposed to before, being a full on third worlder, very old fashioned. And it's been the best thing that's happened to me, being able to share, because I feel they've taught me, but we've also taught them, because some of these ladies made comments that, you know, they haven't had the same opportunities as men in their life. But then I would say, I'm a white African. You ladies had opportunities I couldn't dream of ever having, you know? So it really depends where you are placed in the world, what your perspective of opportunity is. But I agree with you as well, Casey. Like, I get tired of all the labels. I get tired of, you know, and there's labels across everything now, whether it's gender, whether it's race, it's, you know, paying the price for things that our ancestors did still today. It's not a nice space to be in, especially because of we're part of a colony, and you know, there was a war. I wasn't even alive there, but we're going to pay the price, and my kids are going to pay the price for those decisions made for generations to come, right? And I don't know at what point and where the world just starts treating people for the merit that they're due as individuals and not label it.
Well, I agree. And we can talk about any topic from the U.S. right now. I would say our biggest split is not race. It's not gender. It's politics. And either you're a liberal or you're a conservative or a woke or not, you know, very. And I feel like there's just no place of, can we all just come together and be one? And I'm going to say the world changed a lot. You're the same age as me in our lifetime, right? We would have probably never as children had the opportunity to ever meet, let alone sit here, you in Africa and me in the US, and have this conversation. And when the internet came out and chat rooms came out, I flocked to it because I wanted to meet different people. And I just reflect on that opportunity. And I was going to say, you know, I went through my career as maybe naive of me, but there's only one thing my father ever told me I could not do, and that was wrestling. And he goes, because boys are mean and they're going to hurt you. So no, you're not going to wrestle. And I'm like, I just idolized my big brother and I wanted to be just like him. Right. And that's the only thing he ever told me I couldn't do. He helped me learn how to drive a tractor. Wasn't really great at it, to change a tire, you know, anything on the farm he taught me to do. And I can't say that, you know, I had more opportunities than he did. My education, you know, college became more accessible. And I look at today's world for our children and I say college is probably not as accessible as it was for me because of the cost and the amount of debt that students have to incur. And listening to you, good education where you live, like very, you have to sacrifice a lot for your kids just to have a good education. Grammar school, not college.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to give people an idea now, my school fees are for two boys in high school is costing about $2,500 a month. It's really expensive because, I mean, to get the earning levels to be able to put them in school, we're giving them pretty much all we got. I'm still working today. That's why I'm doing the Nuffield Scholarship. That's why I'm busy doing an Acumen for Business Leadership course, which is like a personalized MBA. That's why I wrote the two books that I wrote, is just continue trying to go and get a better education because I wasn't given those opportunities. I'm like a really young age. Everything that went on and the whole world fell in around us, I had to check out. So, you know, it's who are you? Where are you in the world and what opportunities have you got? And I think people too quickly want to aim the immediate environment for them not getting to what they want. And what I know for a stone cold fact is if you want something, you can get it. If you want to do something, you can do it. And not to use any sort of not scapegoats or excuses, like get up, get it done, work it out, plan your life, write it down, and work every day towards it.
And I bring that up because some of my colleagues have made the point, and you can tell by just going out there, and I'm not going to name my colleague, but at the animal science meetings, the graduate students, and I've heard some professors mention, you know, undergrad animal science students now are 80 to 90% female. And a lot of them are because they want to be pre-vet. And we look at vet school, it's the same thing. And we're starting to ask the question, has the pendulum, at least in the first world countries, swung the, you know, too far the wrong way, where now we don't have men coming into our industry as much? And to me, that creates other challenges. And I feel like regardless of what you say, as a female versus you as a male, I have different personality traits and different skills that I'm good at than you. And I fought my early career trying to be just like a man or just as good. And actually, that was wrong because I had, from the standpoint, I had to figure out how to do some of the same things differently. And I didn't necessarily embrace it. You know, now I have scoliosis. My right knee, as I'm going to call it, I call it my sow knee. And I'm sure here in another 10 years, I'm going to get an artificial knee. or I'm going to be like my dad, as I tell everybody, be the robotic man. Like my whole right side's going to be like replacements because that's how I pushed the pigs around and, you know, carried the feed sacks and things. But I go into it because I also have a son who's a boy, and he's been labeled as well as ADHD, and he doesn't fit well into school, and constantly struggle with that as well. And you have two sons, and kind of, I noticed, you know, working with people from Africa, it's different. Your guys' culture is a lot different. And kind of how does that gender dynamics play a role, do you think, in agriculture, in your business today, in your culture, that may be different than even in the U.S. perspective?
Yeah, that's a cool story, and I hope people don't all take it wrong. So with our sort of African workers, their culture sort of suppresses a woman a lot more than the rest of the world. And I think that's slowly starting to change. But, you know, like I've seen it where a group of men will be sitting in a circle, and if one of the women has to come in, she has to be lower than all the men. So that's just an example. So, I mean, a lady to take over our farrowing houses on the one farm, she was an absolute powerhouse. She kind of failed her interview with me because she was really nervous and she stuttered. But I said, I'm going to try and look through the interview, and gave her the chance. And it's the best thing I ever did. But it was really hard bringing her to that particular farm. I had 60 male workers on it. And she needed the full support from me because these African men looked at this single girl who didn't have children. That's actually another thing they say about age. And one of the comments they'll make to you if you try and tell them to do something is they'll say, "Iwe une mwana mangani," which means, how many children have you got? I've got 5 kids. You've got 2. Don't tell me what to do. You know, like, so they'll use how many kids you've got as a comparison. And then with this girl that worked with us, you know, they didn't want to listen to her. They were all calling her Cece or sister. And I remember calling a whole farm around the one day, and I said, right, the next guy who calls her sister, I'm firing, because she's here as your boss. Let's give her the respect. And she needed the full support from me, and it did embarrass her a little bit. But after that, the guy started changing, and it was a battle to get them to accept her as a leader. Fortunately, she got really stuck in, and she was a great, you know, advocate for women. So I think it is changing. I think it's slower and harder in more third world countries. It's definitely more backwards. I didn't send it to you, but I said I would. I took a photo of a massive billboard in Chirundu, which is the border of Zimbabwe and Zambia, encouraging women to vote. I mean, like, we're far into the 20th century now, and there's still billboard saying women should be given the opportunity to vote. And it's like, I don't know if that's sad or like it's not a positive that we're this far down the road and that still has to be advertised at that level.
No, I mean, I agree. And I could say I have some very similar stories to that young lady that you hired as your farrowing department manager. Working with Hispanic culture, this is 20 some years ago, guys, so realize this, right? Before social media, there was a very hierarchy, right, of the age, for one thing. I had the age strike against me for no matter who I worked with, regardless of gender or ethnicity. I was the young college student who knew everything, right? And I didn't, you know, just because you're book smart doesn't mean that you're pig smart. But they soon realized that I was also pig smart. But then I had that culture of Hispanics, right? The older married man was the leader and kind of had to follow suit. And so in my career as a farm manager, I was asked to be married. Somebody asked me to marry him. Or I was hated because I was just this mean person degrading them because I was a female and I didn't get respect. And, you know, we've learned a lot in the industry since then. But I still talk to my female colleagues who still feel like there's a glass ceiling and a bigger concern that some of these colleagues aren't from the U.S. And so I'm speaking on their behalf because they're afraid to speak publicly about this, that, you know, because they're not from America or they don't look like the white American, that they're not respected as much. And there's even, you know, a lower glass ceiling. And when I hear that, like you said, women voting, I thought that's no big deal. But we go from a third world type situation where you are to the US. And I see this with my colleagues and I'm like, what do you mean? I mean, you're intelligent. You can do anything you want. And I don't know what advice to give them anymore of how do you just break out? And that's why I love your series you're doing on Unstoppable, because I think there's lessons that we all can learn in resilience. And my career is full of it. Your career is full of it. How do we give some of these younger people, regardless of being a female or male, right? A white male in your area, an international immigrant female in my area, per se. What are some of the things you've learned for that resilience? Because it's easier said to say, this is what I want to do, and I go out and do it. But I mean, what advice do you give them that? Because I'm at a loss. I'm really perplexed. And I say that because I've worked so hard in my career to crash that glass ceiling for others.
It's such a different one. My like heart goes out to them as well. And to ladies, like as much as my heart goes out to like white cunts to men, I've got a really dear friend of mine. And she kind of spoke about her challenges, you know, in the workplace where she had been employed for much longer than a white guy that came in, got the job under her and was paid more than her, you know, and there's situations like that, which don't sit well with me, but I don't think everyone needs to get labeled. Those international ladies you talk about, that's their reality, right? Their reality is they feeling like they don't have the opportunities, and it's probably one that I really want to sit with and think about, because there are people in this life who've had worse situations than maybe having a belief that there's a lower glass ceiling that have managed to break that and break through. So the question is, how do you break sort of all of those narratives that surround your life? And I think there's a few really important things that people have to do. They have to be careful who is in their sphere of influence. And this is the toughest one you have to do to sort of break any stigma. And I've done this. I've had to do this myself, but you are the average of your five. You know, statistically, that's impossible, but because human beings attract intent, that's what you've got to be very selective of who your five are. You can always create the fifth, which is nice. The fifth is created by listening to the right audios, podcasts, reading the right stuff. But the four people around you need to be people who aren't going to be focused on, oh, I don't have opportunities because I'm a woman. That person needs to change this way to say, I want women in my life that the sky's the limit, doesn't matter where we come from. They need to have people that are healthy, that are focused, that will help them do that. So they need to start changing their own narrative. They need to remove themselves from conversations that make them believe that they're not good enough or have that. And they need to start believing that they're limitless. And a big part of that journey is, and you'll hear me say it time and time and time again, they need to understand who they want to be. And they need to write that down. Who do I want to be by the end of my life when I get to 80, 90 years old, and I look back, you know, what would I have wanted to achieve in my life? And they need to know who that person is. And once they establish and is at the end of their life, they can start mapping their way through it to become that person. And they've got to write it down. You've got to write down by 60, what will I have achieved? By 40, what will I have achieved? And then you bring it down closer. What do you need to do to get there? But definitely understand who you want to be by the end of it. And change the narrative. And one of them, there are a couple of tricks, but one of them is definitely managing your five.
You just gave me a good idea, because somebody who lives in data analytics world and metrics matter, I need to put a list on my wall of everybody. I talk about all these people I've helped, but I need to be able to, when I have a bad day, I need to be like looking around who I've helped. And I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to start putting their pictures up and their names.
Definitely. Visualizing that stuff is really important as well, because sometimes you have to dig deep. You know, both of us today, we're going to have days where you're not feeling good, days that you've got imposter syndrome. And if you can visualize that in the people and the characters and the personalities, that's part of your journey. And it's not a secret, because they wrote the book. The secret part of that is visualization of everything.
Yeah, I'm going to get rid of these cool paintings and you're going to see people on my wall. Maybe I'll have to ask them permission if they're in the camera view, but I think I'm going to start doing that. These are all the people I helped, and visualize it. And then hopefully, you know, maybe it's a map. So I helped this person and they did these five things. And you're right. You need to visualize it. And I would say to some of these women. And I get this, because when you're very driven and competitive, where do you go next in your career? And you feel that way too. I feel that way. I'll use my example. The reason why I didn't go take another job, Philip, and start at my own company was because I saw either there was these programs for younger people, like the under 30s in my industry, or there was the move up for, you know, older people, or I was like in the middle group where there was no program to help me thrive or do well. And everybody loved me as a technical service manager because I could talk to people and understood the problems, but nobody saw me taking that next step as, you know, the director level or the VP. And I also want to say there's some dilemma into that, talking to working parents, because unannounced to the audience, I did have an offer for a global tech service role here this year, as I'm struggling to figure out what I want to do when I grow up. And I had to reflect back on it. I said, there's a reason why I went to work for myself, was because my family comes first. And I could just imagine I'd be going all over the world again, and I would have influence, right? And I'd be meeting new people, and it would give me a different perspective again. But ultimately, I said no, because of what's important here. And my friends in the industry, which also would be my customers, said, hey, I'd like to come see you, talk about this new stuff I'm working on, but I got to balance it around my son. And they're like, family first, right? So you talked about that core group who you have in you is, yeah, I may have given up a really good paycheck, a really great opportunity with an international company to keep going at the Sunswine Group. But I, you know, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to see this be successful. But I think, as you said, there's a lot of things you want to do career-wise, but you make choices for your children as well. And how do you balance that as a working parent of, yeah, this is my dream, but it's going to have to wait, or it's going to have to be delayed?
That's a really good question. So part of your journey, and part of like what I said, where they need to visualize where they want to go, is to know what their why is and what your ambition is. But your why is really strong. And my why is based on my two boys. That's all I got. And everything I do every day, I get up, all my dreams, all my ambitions, I've spent that time where I've sat down with me, I've written down my ambition, I know what I want, and I've made sure that while I was doing that work, what I'm doing now, or what I might may grow into, incorporates the boys. So we don't always have the choice to do what we want to do. Sometimes we do what we have to do. And that's sort of the place I've been in my whole life, is I've literally just had to do what I've needed to do. So I'm definitely not a person standing here or sitting here today saying that it's easy. It's not easy. It's certainly not easy. But what I do is make sure that the boys are also aware of what I'm doing, how it's going, you know, where that sort of benefits them, where the sort of roads meet for them. And they're having an incredible year to date. I mean, one of the kids just got a send up at school. He got, I don't know, 16 out of 18 possible A's for his exams, having a great time. And I feel that a lot of that's attributed to them knowing that it's not cheap to keep them in school, that it's a struggle, but not making them feel bad about it, making them feel motivated about it. So I'm not giving it to them like a heavy satchel to carry. We talk about it, and they appreciate that, and they're aware of it. And they're going to go into a world which I couldn't dream of trying to compete in. There's going to be, I don't know how many billions of people in the world, and they just have to absolutely be the best. Sorry, I think I sidetracked there a little bit, but yeah, I don't know yet.
Great, because you just tore down the gender role, because it doesn't matter if you're a mom, a dad, a sister, a brother, mother, you know, you just broke it down. Is things come in stages, and I think we forget how far we've come.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And I think the more people get to know me and hear my story as well, and I currently am a single dad, and but prior to that, it's been an incredibly difficult journey, and you just got to do what you have to do and do it the best you can. But I still encourage people not to lose focus. The first time I wrote my ambition down was like 6 years ago. And I write it down every day, like my 5-year goal. Like, this is what I wanted to do in 5 years, what I want to have achieved. And I didn't do that in 5 years. I didn't even get nearly there. But when I sat down with myself again and rewrote it, I wrote it even bigger and better this time. Like, it's not going to stop me dreaming and believing, but it's also not going to stop me doing what I need to do today and doing it the best that I can either.
And I think that's a good piece of advice as I reflect and I talk to not only early career, but I would say early mid-career, because unfortunately our careers can last forever today. But I think so early we accomplish so much. We get our PhDs, our DVMs, we get our job we want. You're the manager or director of the whole operation. And it's like, what's next? What's my purpose? And I think a lot of times we all forget about being great at what we do. And I know it's part of human nature that we always want more and to do more. And I'm really reflecting at my business of saying, for this business to be successful in it, to be around and for me to help people, I need to make money. I realize that now that having a lot more wealth will allow me to broaden my people I can help and the amount of people I can help, which is my mission in life, right? To create and help people go from surviving to thriving. That's my mission. And the podcast is one of my creations to do that. But I had to reflect, I have to get serious about this. I have to fine tune this. And I've fixed a lot of production systems. And now it's time for me to fix my business from surviving to thriving. And then I can hit that bigger picture, right? When I talk about these international outreaches, helping people establish better agriculture and food systems and helping people break the barriers they thought, were impossible to break. I got to do things right today to get there. And I have to realize that I can be great and be inspiring still for tomorrow. But unless I get my crap right today, I can't do that tomorrow. So people may see some differences for me, but that's because I haven't given up on that mission. I may not start a nonprofit. I may, but who knows? I may retire as a multimillionaire and all that money can go into that nonprofit in the future. So I guess regardless of gender, I think we're talking, this has went beyond gender, which I love it, which I was going to push you into it because I want people to see a little bit about who you are.
Yeah. Jess, I think it's an incredible vision, and I should actually, it's in the next door room, I should grab my ambition pack because it's a book, and this Acumen for Business Leadership course that I'm doing, which I highly recommend people do, starts with Ambitions of Cornerstone, and that's part of mine. Like, part of where I want to go to, Jess, I don't want the boys to have to go through the same things I have done in life. Like, I want to create opportunities that they don't have to have the struggle. I want to make sure I set up a life that I can always be a part of their lives somehow, wherever in the world they go to. And then the final thing is, like, when they set up and they're established and they got their roots down, I think a very similar vision to what you have is I want to make guys like me who never had the opportunities or never had anyone in their corner are identified and guided and counseled. And definitely, Casey, part of that is, unfortunately, it's an animal, but it is the finances. Because like even now, I can have this huge dream, huge vision. I know where I want to go. It's taken a really long time to get absolute clarity in my life. But then there's this handbreaking. Like, how do we break this now? Let's break these chains. So I would also love to be, and I'm nowhere near that yet, but I know I'm going to be. And I know there's guys like me in this world, youngsters that are going to come through, that I want to be a part of getting them into this. Because the blast radius of that is massive. It's not the individual. It's family. It's children. It's generations. You know, you identify the one who changes it for the entire family tree. So that's a big part of my why as well.
Well, that's great. Let's take it back to topic because the unstoppable Philip Johan Oldendahl is on the mic. Bomb drop, right? If we had that, we're going to try to edit it in and put the bomb drop of the mic dropping. But as a manager, there's a lot of questions on gender. What have you learned being a manager to work between gender in your mind, from your perspective? What are some of the things that consider as a manager working with different genders, different ethnicities, potentially different class statuses and stuff? And how do you navigate that as a manager and leader in your company today?
It's an interesting question as well. I feel it's an area that I am strong at, is identifying individuals for what they're good at. There are roles. So if we go, because we do work with different class individuals, with really low educated staff, some of them, will be as little as grade 5. So if you start sort of at the bottom, the lower paid jobs, more hands-on jobs, there are jobs that men are better than at women. Bell curve, I know it's a bell curve, but there are jobs that women are incredible with as well. So we kind of give the best person for that role their job. So I think in that sense, men and women need to be celebrated for their own different strengths. And there's non-negotiables as far as I'm concerned. I don't think I've had to think about it. It's that, or it's a woman, or it's that, it's a man. I mean, it shouldn't have to be like that. It's just some of it. Women are better at certain jobs than men. Let them do those jobs. They're amazing at it. And, lumping the 50 kilo bags off the trucks all day, we don't generally have women in those jobs. They struggle with that. Again, it's a bell curve. As you sort of go up the class status and up the ladder to more senior positions, I'm really glad that I've evolved in this area. Thanks to my lady colleagues and friends of Nuffield. I am really happy that they've come through. And again, we've had positions come through where in my mind was for a man. And we've done a set of interviews, and the interviews went back around a second time, and not the girl I referred to earlier, but I remember sitting down and saying, this one particular female outshines everyone. And I called her back in and I said, you interviewed the best, so you're challenging me right now. Now I'm challenged, because in my mind, this was a man's job. And I said, can you work with X amount of men under you? And you're a young female, you're not married. And all she said was, give me a chance. Let me show you. And she's doing incredibly well. So I think I'm really happy to have been open-minded enough to allow her that opportunity. And going back to what I said, I think people need to be sort of judged on merit and not on gender. Who are they? Are they an outlier of the bell curve? That also needs to be taken into account, because you can't just lump everyone into the same place.
I love it. I was going to say more so, I don't even know if we need to have jobs, which is really hard to do in agriculture, right? There's certain tasks we have to do no matter what. That has to be done. But in society, you start thinking more about, in companies, when you find that shining star that you talked about, why make them fit a role versus creating a role for them? And I use that in, I use it in ag, and obviously there's labor stuff that we're always going to have. And our best people are never going to stay in the labor components of our industry. I mean, look at you, right? You're an example of that. I'm an example of that, right? I was not doing our industry any benefits by staying a farrowing tech or a farrowing department manager, or, living that. There was something more for me to do for the industry. But I think, as a manager now, and being able to control the decisions I have and salaries and people I hire, I've found that it's much easier to bring them in, teach them a little bit of everything, and see what they shine, what they really like doing. And I create that job, hopefully, for them. And it may be a little accounting. It may be a little marketing. It may be a little bit of sales. It may be a little bit of tech service. But I feel like I'm small enough and nimble enough yet as a business, as I'm developing people. I hate to put them in boxes, regardless of who they are. And I think if we think about that, and, we're having a lot of hard times in agriculture wanting people to come work. And it's maybe, we don't have clear enough visions of what their future could be. But I think also we try to take these outliers, which are superstars, by the way, usually the outliers that we're talking about, the other outliers disappear. But we want them to fit a box that they were never meant to fit.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, you know, and again, circling back, some people want to be in that box and some don't. And it's identifying the ones that don't want to be in the box, that want to do more, that want to achieve more, and harnessing that, because otherwise that person, you'll lose them, you know, because they've got bigger dreams, and rather have that person and ride with that person. Your company will do so much better. Your business will do so much better. Those superstars need to be celebrated.
But we also have to make it okay for the rest of the people that it's okay to find your box and stay there.
Yeah.
But we also, I think, have to still find a way to reward them, right? To feel like their value. Well, I'm a farrowing department head lead for the rest of my career. There's a lot more we can give that farrowing department lead to say, hey, you're really good at this. This is where we want to keep you. This is where we need you. But there's other things, I think.
And how do we incentivize them?
Yeah. And make them happy. And you can get a PhD and still be a farrowing department lead if you want to be, in my mind. Because there's a lot of days I would be like, I just want to burn my resume and see if I can apply and just be a farrowing lead again. And just people let me cuddle the baby pigs and, you know, take care of the mama sows and do that and leave me alone. So if you ever see maybe that alter ego resume come through, maybe you'll understand where I'm at in my life and my career, that I just want to cuddle baby pigs.
Yeah, no, I get that. Like, I'm a pretty big guy, 6 foot 525 kilograms, and some days I just want to hug a Yorkie. Like, just bring me a Yorkie. Like, we also have those days.
Yeah. I think this is some really good conversation. I appreciate you helping me break that barrier a little bit. I really hope to use this episode and the content out of it to mirror in Coffee in the Barn, or it's more a women's led working mom type of podcast, to talk about it there as well, because I am a mom of a son and I'm concerned about his future, right? Of being this rough and tumble guy that he's going to be like his dad, and where is he going to fit in and stuff. But yet having that soft artsy type guy appeal to a little bit. And so it's really excited to see what kind of man he becomes, and but yet having that future that he can thrive as well. So thank you, Philip, for helping us break down that conversation. And I encourage our listeners to break it down in their companies and their
groups. Be kind about it.
Feel safe that you have a voice. And if you feel you don't have a voice, I'm here to be your voice.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think so. I think it's a great conversation. It does make me nervous. Hopefully nothing's been said that gets taken the wrong way, but I just think people need to continue being the best versions of themselves that they can be kind and just celebrate each other's strengths.
Well, I'm not going to say any more, and said what it needed to be said. Well, thank you, Philip, for the conversation.
Cool.
And as always, if you get a chance today, hug a pig for me or a Yorkie in Philip's case.
No, we can't make that a thing.